You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big day, big show for you today on the Bite Me podcast. I am John Lopez. That is Captain Scott Null across the table from me. And if you're getting this early enough, come on out and say hello to us. Actually, Scott will be at the show all weekend long, and he's easy to find. I'll get the details of where he is in just a second. He and I will be kicking off the seminars and presentations, whatever you want to call it, 4 p.m. today. If you're on your way out to the George R. Brown, come say hello, and we'll have that presentation, that Q&A with Bite Me listeners. Come on out and ask the questions, and we'll take care of you. But the whole weekend is going to be good at the Fishing Show, obviously, as it always is. It's like going to a Toys R Us when you're 10 years old. I mean, everything, your head's on a swivel. Lots of great guys out there. Of course, we're going to be talking to them over the course of the next few days. I actually have my daughter getting hitched on Saturday, so I won't be around for obvious reasons Friday and Saturday, but I'm gonna make it out there as much as I can, and come on out today. Scott, let's get some of the details out. We got a big show today in terms of topics, fishing topics. I like all of them, and the vast majority of them come from our listeners on the Bite Me group page. If you're not a member, it's easy. Just click, and we will approve you. It's Facebook, obviously, the Bite Me Fishing Podcast. You can find it, and all these topics and questions, and anyway, the majority of them come from there. And you can also reach us. I'm at Lopez on Sports on Instagram and Twitter. He is Captain Scott Null on Instagram. But really, hit us with the questions on the group page, and we can take care of you from there. And certainly some of our thousands of followers there help out as well. It's a really great community. One last thing, and we'll get into the topics. Don't forget to sign up for the podcast. You can subscribe pretty much anywhere where there are podcasts. You can subscribe, and we're good to go. All right, when should you be on the water before daybreak? We've said in very recent episodes that it's not always necessary to be up at the crack of dawn or before and get out on the water, but there are times when you should. Strategies fishing deep drop-offs. I have a hunch that Captain Scott is going to have a lot of insight on that, especially having fished all up and down the Texas coast. What if where you are fishing and where you like to fish is in the way? And we'll get into details of that, of other boat traffic and such. Protected shorelines versus windblown shorelines, and we will go on and on and on. But, Scott, we are in the midst of the Houston Fishing Show. Give us the details where people can come. I'll be hanging out with you in your booth, whether you know it or not, for a little bit. So where people can come find you and find us.
I was just over there setting up my booth. Mm-hmm. I was in the same place I was last year, exact same spot on the corner. As you go down that middle aisle, I'm on one of the end cap. Mm-hmm. One of the advantages of having been to the show for so many years is you get a little better and a little better place.
You can swing some of that leverage.
And then Caleb's across from me and over about three or four. Mm-hmm. If you need to find me, look for Laguna Rods. They're directly across from me. Sarge Rods is across a different aisle from me. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that hard to find.
Right.
And, that you got, man, you got everybody's there. Fishing Tackle Unlimited, they're all in there.
Everyone is there.
They're stocking the shelves right now. And every booth that I went by, everybody's putting all their merchandise out. Everybody's getting everything ready. Mm-hmm. And looks like it's going to be a big full
show. It's exciting. It's like when you go fishing, you get excited when you catch any fish. Yep. It's exciting to walk through there. How many does this make for you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I really don't. A lot. A whole lot. I was working. As far as working them, mm-hmm. I was still working them when I was on the police department.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did probably 2 or 3 years while I was still on the police department, just working the FTU booth. Yeah. As an extra.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've had my own booth probably 5 or 6 years, something like that.
Good deal. And quite a lineup as well. And I'm not talking about us. I mean, we're going to be out there. Hopefully the listeners get out there and ask us whatever they want. You may hear your voice on a future podcast, but Cap Mickey a lot of times is emceeing a lot and organizing some of the seminars. You're going to have a personal seminar. I know some of our buddies up and down the coast are going to be having seminars. It's a true learning experience as well as, new fun toys.
Yeah, the seminars alone are worth the price of admission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get to listen to some really good, I mean, I slip in there all the time.
Yeah.
And listen to different people talk. I mean, that first day, it's us to start off. And then I want to say it's like Mickey and James Plug and somebody else was with them. There was like three guys that are, been around
heavyweights
forever.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy West follows them up. I mean, you don't get to, even when you're on a boat with them, you don't get to hear all of the things that they're going to talk
because
about.
Because their wheels are just turning.
Right.
You know, when they're fishing with them, you pick up on some stuff, but like, I know you can relate because you do it. You're thinking about stuff kind of quietly, you know, as the guys fish, but now you can verbalize it and you can ask questions of these guys and it's really cool. Hey, I'm kind of going to be there all weekend. Did you see my boat? How about that? The boatyard, man.
I haven't gone by and seen it yet.
The boatyard was, kind enough to ask me to use my boat, at their booth, and it's a pretty dang impressive booth, at least in recent years, and I know it will be again because I've seen pictures. But I put the Simrad cover on the Simrad. I turned the battery off. I don't have a key. I didn't give him a key. I said, I'm not going to give you a key. He said, that's cool. So if you were thinking about taking my numbers, I guess you could still, if you're pretty industrious, still get my numbers and my spots. But I made it as difficult as possible. Nobody would do that, right? Never.
Oh, man.
Never in a million years.
There's a story on that with Captain Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
We were fishing one of the redfish cups, and it was at Kima. Mm-hmm. And we were weighing in on the boardwalk.
Yeah.
And we all parked our boats, off to the side over there.
I know where this is going.
And somebody had actually, Mickey won that tournament, and he had some big fish. He was catching 10-pound slots.
Jeez.
I mean, they were slobs. I've never seen redfish that looked like that on a consistent basis. I mean, he did it like 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
And somebody went over there during the weigh-in and turned his GPS on.
You're kidding me.
And apparently got some information off of there.
I'm sure Mickey handled that very well.
Yeah, Mickey's a mild-mannered guy, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure he didn't have any opinions about that whatsoever.
He was pleased. Extremely pleased that he could help somebody out.
What's mine is yours. What's mine is yours. Hey, well, let me just tell you this. If you see that beautiful warrior out there, what's mine is mine. No, I'm just kidding.
I was just looking at the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are at 4. It's Jimmy West follows us up at 5.
Okay.
Then at 6, it's Mickey. Along with James Plog and Steve Hillman.
Man,
so that's
pretty strong.
That's an Astros lineup right there.
That's right. That's Altuve, Brantley.
That's pretty cool.
That is very, very cool.
And Sunday I've got mine. I'm gonna talk sightcasting, Port O'Connor, just in general. I don't ever really have a set thing that I'm gonna talk about. I just kinda feel the crowd out. But anything from redfish to tarpon fishing to jetty fishing, whatever anybody wants to hear about.
Right.
I'll have a basic outline, but I don't stick to it very close.
Well, that's the way it should be. I mean, you get people to be interactive with you. And, in fact, that's very good transition to our topics today because that's how this monster of a podcast all of a sudden got started. We were just wanting to talk about how to catch fish and – now we do it every week. I do want to give another shout out real quick on the fishing show because I'll be spending some time there as well. Fishing Tackle Unlimited, very good friend of the program. That new green rod that you and I have talked about repeatedly, and I'm flat out 100% sold. I mean, it's my rod. It's a bad boy. They'll be there so you can see that. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of those.
Yep, and you can come by my booth, and I'm supposed to have cards. I haven't got them yet, but I'm supposed to have some business cards from Fish and Tackle Unlimited. They'll have a discount.
Oh, nice.
For that rod.
Nice.
For a green rod.
Well, we do take care of our listeners, so let me do two other discounts that are just for Bite Me listeners as well real quick before we get into the first big topic. Y'all know about Wade Wright, the big package they have. for Bite Me listeners is really, really cool. It has the, you gotta go to the website first of all. But, you type in Bite Me 20 and you're gonna get 20% off the entire big package, which includes the belt, the sling. It has pretty much everything you could imagine for a wade fisherman and then some. In fact, I've got it right here. It has the back support, the front rod tube, the large box, the small box, Madre sling, wade net, stringer holder, stringer wrap, $190 value, down to $120, and then you do Bite Me 20 and you get another 20% off. And then this is a new one, and this is very personal to me. I tweeted it out and put it on Facebook the other day. You may have seen it on the Bite Me group page. Deadly Dudley, my guy Paul Falgu, you know, he knows I've been very, very loyal. I've spent a lot of money on Deadly Dudley soft plastics. So for Bite Me listeners, you can go to deadlydudley.com, shop whatever you want. I'm a big fan of certain ones, but like the Electric Chicken and the Salt and Pepper and the Beethoven one, you know, that Mojo Mullet and all those. But you can text me if you have any questions, but type in Jay Lopez on the code and you get 10% off there.
Aren't you special?
How about that? I feel so important. I've given them thousands of dollars over the last 15 years. It's about time they give some of my friends a 10% discount. It's a good soft plastic. What am I missing?
Shimano's got their own booth.
Shimano's going to be there.
Right across from Fish and Tackle Unlimited. Fish and Tackle Unlimited, it's got that huge booth up in the corner.
Coastal's going to be there.
Coastal will be within the booth. They have a new pair of sunglasses I want to try out. I haven't seen
them. What
are
they? I'm not familiar.
The Blackfin. They've mm-hmm. been around for a long time, the Blackfin. Mm-hmm. They call it now, the new one is the Blackfin Pro.
Okay.
And it's got a lot of sweat management and fog management.
That's
built
key.
Into it.
That's
and
key.
It's pretty interesting. What I've read about it's really interesting. I want to see if they fit me. You know, all mm-hmm. these different glasses fit a little different. But, yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's mm-hmm. got drains. You know, when you get out there in the middle of summer on the beachfront, and it's August, it's 100 degrees, and there's no wind.
Yeah,
sweat management becomes a thing.
Big time.
So does fog.
Big time.
All glasses fogging up. So it's got some vents in it, and that it looks interesting to me. I'm gonna try them out.
And you got your guys at DOA gonna be there.
DOA's there. Ed's on his way. He was about an hour and a half out.
Okay.
He was supposed to have been there already, and I was hoping that he would get there early, like he and I had talked about a while back, and get him in here.
Yeah.
I was gonna throw him in the truck, kidnap him.
Yeah.
Bring him up here straight from the show and sit him down with us.
We'll get him.
We need to get him on sometime. He's a very interesting guy.
Yeah, we're going to talk to all kinds of guys, and our listeners are going to be able to, you know, if for some reason you can't make it out there, we got the whole coast covered this week. So in the next week or so on these episodes, you'll be hearing from all kinds of guys. But right now you hear from my guy, one of the best to do it. That's Scott Null. First topic we got, I have some, obviously a lot of us do, but I have some experience with my personal preferences. Obviously, sometimes tides and moons and all that comes into play. But the question is, when should you really be out on the water before daybreak? Because in very recent episodes, we've talked about it. Yeah, you really don't need to if you're looking at this time of year, you know, some of the tides, some of the wind directions, and et cetera, et cetera. But there are times when, you know what, set that alarm, right?
Yeah, if the salooner's lining up right and, you know, you're really a big believer in that, catching a full moon as the full moon's going down.
Yep.
You know, right there. Yeah. It's not necessarily a full moon when it's going down at sunrise, but it's pretty close. And, times like that, yes, definitely in the summer. Anytime that water temperature starts getting up where it feels like bath water,
mm-hmm.
We're not there yet. You know, we're still in the 70s. So, but when that water temperature gets those high 70s, low 80s, mm-hmm. I always just describe it as it just feels slimy or something. It's a gross feeling when you
gross.
Crawl off into it.
It's gross.
But those times, fish early, mm-hmm. fish real early. It's not unusual at that time of year, you know, help me about waiting it an hour before daylight.
In my experience, and I sent this to you before the show, you know, obviously full moon, as you mentioned. But my experience has been the jetties. I've always had – even when the moon is not necessarily, you know, setting a full moon or whatever, still out, you're late in that. Even if the tide is not necessarily right, for some reason, tell me if I'm wrong, but my personal experience is when you get determined to fish the jetties and the water's going to be right, I always try to be out there before daylight.
Yeah, I mean, the jetties are, they're so tide dependent. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the right tide, you know, the tide you want, incoming or outgoing, which one you prefer for the area you fish, you've got that. You know, it's going to happen right before daylight. That's mm-hmm. a damn good time to be there.
Yeah.
What you've got is deeper water all around you, and those fish will get up tight to the rocks and be shallow
right
during that low light period. Some of the biggest trout I've caught off of the Galveston jetties were off the North Jetty. I used to wait it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I got me a job in Galveston's. So that I could be down there. And I would drive down and I'd go wade. I'd take off and walk the jetties or wade every morning. And I would always do it before daylight so I could get about 3 or 4 hours in before I had to go to work.
Right.
And I caught some really big trout throwing mirror lures right at the base of the North Jetty.
So weird how much some of our histories are similar. My first job out of A&M in the early 80s was at the Brazosport Facts in Clute, Texas. So, of course, you know, living by yourself, I would go wade the jetties, the Surfside jetties, yep. Before daylight, you know, because I didn't have to get in. I had the late shift. You know, I didn't have to get in until like 2 o'clock. And I would do that exact same thing in Surfside. I lived in Lake Jackson. Would just go to Surfside and wade that jetty, whichever one, you know, on the side, or walk the jetties or whatever. Man, that was some fun time. But before dawn, I for some reason, no matter tides and such, they just seem to. I don't know if it's boat traffic.
It could be.
I don't know.
Could
if
be
it's
some boat traffic.
You know,
could be that. I think it's just that lower light period,
mm-hmm.
and they're more comfortable. Yeah, my job, I was Pluto.
Pluto?
Yep.
What does that mean?
I was Pluto in a Mickey
Oh, deal. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That was my thing.
There's got to
I
be pictures somewhere.
I was an entertainer, man.
Hey, Camille, I know you listen.
I don't think anybody ever got pictures of that.
Camille, I know you listen every week, but that Bite Me group page is begging for a picture of Captain Scott dressed as Pluto.
If you just found a picture of Pluto, you could say it was me. You couldn't tell. I had that big costume on.
What?
That was the stinkinest costume.
Oh, they all are.
Oh, my God. That was the
What'd
was
you
nasty.
Do? You just, like, waved your arms and danced around?
Yeah, because Pluto doesn't talk.
Yeah.
So they didn't give me any lines. And, yeah, we were entertaining the kids.
Who knew? You could have talked to Red Streak, man. since we're on the jetties, so to speak, for our listeners, I feel like we should also talk about when you are fishing the jetties. I know this is a question that's come up, and it may well come up in our seminar today. But, you know, where to – let's just reinforce, you know, some of the signs that you go through the jetties pretty much every day when you're fishing, you know, the beachfront.
Yep.
What are you looking at? What are you seeing? A lot of people talk about tidal movement through the rocks, maybe some rocks that are falling down. We've talked about that. But what else are you looking – if you're trying to fish the actual jetties, not go off and tarpon or jackfish.
Bait is key. I mean, it's the same as in the bays. You know, if you don't have the bait there, you're not going to have the fish there.
Yeah.
Seeing the bait at the jetties can be a little difficult at times. That's why I love my side scan. That hummingbird, I got that side scan going, and I just kind of mutter down the jetties. Our jetties don't get crowded mm-hmm. like some others up and down the coast. Not terribly crowded. There'll be a boat or two here and there.
Yeah.
But you're out there on weekday. I can run pretty much the whole jetty mm-hmm. and not have to go around anybody. And so I'll make that scan. What I really enjoy is when there's zero tide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in between tides, and I can run that thing, and I can look and see which jetty all the bait's on. And because that time when there's no tide moving, that the bait will be down, hanging out deep, and you can see those clouds.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for. And then I just remember, okay, they're halfway down the south jetty today on the inside. There will be an area for whatever reason that they'll congregate a little more than other areas.
Mm-hmm.
Find the one that's got the most bait, and then as soon as that tide changes and it starts coming in or going out or whatever it's doing, go right back to that spot in that area.
Yeah.
That's where your fish are going to start feeding. The little fish will start moving up next to the rocks, and then you can see them. When there's tide moving, you can generally see the bait fish. I'm still looking on the side scan, but they're a lot more evident when there's some tidal movement.
Yeah.
It just seems like when it dies, you know, when the on the slack tide, they just kind of drop down a little bit. You'll still see some up top.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot. If you, depends on what you're fishing for, too. If you're fishing for big fish, you know, you're hoping to get some kings or the tarpon or big bull reds. Look for a little bigger bait, you know, little hardtails, something like that. The jacks are real good about pushing those hardtails. But as far as trout, I'm probably going to slide around to the outside of the jetty for trout and fish more of an incoming. I fish the inside on the outgoing. Most of the time, there's no set rule to it.
You can do it both sides, but generally speaking, what you're talking about.
I can generally find trout on the outsides.
Yeah.
A little more consistently. Birds, you know, birds will work on the jetties just like they do anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I look for all the time is all the pelicans. Wherever the pelicans are congregating on the rocks, they may not be diving. They may not be doing anything, but if it's a slack tide and there's 500 pelicans and they're all sitting within 100 yards.
Yeah. They're there for a reason.
Take a guess why they're there.
Yeah.
You know, they're not stupid. And one of the best mornings I ever had on tarpon on the jetties, I had fish that were about 8 or 9 miles down the beach that I'd been on for a couple of days. So, of course, that's where I'm headed.
Yeah.
And I'm buzzing out through the jetties, and also I'm talking to my guy, I got them down there, you know.
We're going to do this and then this and then this.
They're down there past the lighthouse. They're about, you know, a quarter mile off the beach. We got this. We're good. We're golden. And I just slammed on the brakes, and he stopped, and he said, "What? What are you doing?" I said, "Man, we got them right here. We don't have to go anywhere."
Yeah.
And he said, "What are you talking about?" The whole rocks were lined with pelicans, and they were literally falling off the rocks. They weren't flying up and diving.
They were just
leaning off the rocks and falling into the water with their mouths open.
Yeah.
And there was just bait everywhere. It was all pushed up against the rocks, and it was tarpon and jacks were all up and down the rocks, and they were just pushing that bait so tight.
That's a good day right there.
Yeah. The birds didn't even have to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, we stayed there for probably 3 or 4 hours. We were by ourselves that day. It wasn't anybody else. Then Will Granberry pulled up, and he saw me with a fish in the air, and he came around the end of the jetties, and he kind of waved at me. I waved him in, you know, 100 yards ahead of me, and said, "Just slide up in there," and he throws live bait, and he had his guy up on the front of the boat, and he nosed up there, and he tossed a live croaker up there, and within seconds of it hitting the water, he's got a 100-150-pound fish on.
Oh, my goodness.
Jumping like crazy. And he waved at me and then he backed out.
Yeah, what you're talking about there is actually scouting the jetties. I mean, you know, slack tide, and you're just looking. You know, you're always looking, and that doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to be there then. But what you're talking about is a great, great tip that I'm just going to be honest, I don't do enough of, because generally you get eager and you're like, well, let's just go somewhere else, and you don't remember to, you know what? Let's go back to where I saw that bait on the slack tide.
No,
you know,
I'm just constantly you know, paying attention to that. One other thing that I look for, we've talked about before, is holes in the jetties.
Right. That's my big thing.
I mean, those jetties are not a solid wall.
No.
You know, people get this idea in their head that it's like a concrete wall across there. I mean, all those holes and cracks and crannies go all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some places that are washed out. You can sometimes see a little dip in the rocks where they've fallen down.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a washout. The main thing I look for is I go out there on a dead calm day when there's not much wind, but we still have some surf.
Right.
Where you've got some big, decent-sized rollers that are coming in on the outside of the jetties.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the inside.
Pretty calm.
And it's dead calm. Now sit back and watch and just keep an eye out. You'll see boils.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a wave comes, you'll see this boiling, swirling.
It almost like it's like it backs up.
Like a little river eddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not like a big, not a toilet, you know, kind of flushing.
Yeah. It's not pushing through there hard.
But there's just a little bit of something different about it. I don't know. It kind of blooms, you know, coming out the other side. Sometimes there will be a little bit clearer water or dirtier water. Depends on, you know, a lot of times water on one side of the jetties is a lot cleaner than the other.
A lot of times.
And so when you're sitting on one of those boils, you can see that cleaner or dirtier water coming through. There will also almost always be birds sitting in that spot.
And that's really good. I'm glad we ended up doing that because it's something that I used to do a lot of in Sabine. There aren't jetties, in East Matagorda Bay now, but there is the Mitchell's Cut. And that's how I get out to the beachfront. But when I was at Sabine, everything you're talking about, I mean, it's the same thing. And it wasn't real crowded it is now more a little bit, but yeah. you can scout jetties, and that's something that people probably should do a lot more of.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. And
especially when it's slack tide, you don't have anything else going on. You know, the fish really aren't feeding, things aren't happening. Use that slack tide time and, side scan, down scan, whatever you've got.
Yeah.
And of course, I suggest a side scan. It really pays off when you're trying to do this kind of stuff.
And that's
a regular down scan it'll spot.
You'll be able to see it depending on how close you can get and such. But just another reminder of what I always say, because I've been on so many boats where guys just don't use their electronics enough. Man, you got that expensive thing for a reason. Use it. All right, so. This is another, you know, Scott Nolte special here, because I know you've been all up and down the coast. I said that at the top of the show. Question from the Bite Me group page on Facebook. Looking for some strategies for fishing deep drop-offs. And he said, as in from a bay system to the intercoastal canal, or from a bay system to like a deep bay. You know, some bays are deeper than others.
Right.
You know, what are your strategies for drop-offs? Is it just get on the drop-off? What are you looking for? Do you drift through? I think he's looking for specifics, because it sounds as if, from what I could gather on the question, he's real big into bay to intercoastal transitions, and he's been hit and miss there. So is there anything that maybe increases your odds a little bit?
Man, it's so different from different parts of the coast.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some spots that Dean and I fish down there around Aransas that he calls, you know, his holes.
Yeah.
And it'll be ankle deep to knee deep up on a flat, and then it drops off to 4 or 5 feet.
Right.
And it's all hard sand. And there's some drains that come off the flats around those areas. We hammer fish on those. I absolutely hammer them. What you got to think is bait fish are up shallow. The tide's falling. They're mm-hmm. getting sucked off of that little flat.
Mm-hmm.
Trout love those drop-offs. They love to hang up against the side of them, especially when it's real hot or real cold. You know, springtime and fall,
right.
I'm going to fish more on the shallow side.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets August, you know, July and August, and it's real hot, that's when I like to fish little drop-offs like that, or when it's real cold in the winter. But as far as the intercoastal goes, it's so different at different points up and down the coast.
Mm-hmm.
If you go down Mansfield direction, Land Cut, all those places, they love fishing that. They fish that, you know, they call it the ditch.
Yeah.
And they fish the ditch all the time. Further up the coast, we get a lot more barge traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And it roils the water up a little bit more, so the water tends to be a little dirtier inside the actual intercoastal.
Right.
You can still catch fish in there, of course, but you've got to deal with more boat traffic, more barge traffic.
You got to have your head on the swivel, too, there.
Yeah. So I'm more about fishing drop-offs in the bay,
mm-hmm.
you know, knowing that there's a channel that goes into a neighborhood and there's flats on either side.
Mm-hmm.
You catch that with some little bit of tide movement and a little bit of bait on it, you can really, you know, you can stand on them pretty good.
Right.
I've caught a lot of fish down Mansfield Way fishing around the spoils. And then early in the morning, they're up shallow on those spoils. And as soon as the sun gets up in July, August, they drop off of them.
Right.
You can do real well there. I tend to wade a little more when I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Stand up on that shallow and just, you know, cast at an angle down the sides.
Right.
Don't try to throw across it. You know, that's not where the fish are. The fish are hanging along the edge.
Right.
And so that's the biggest mistake I see people doing fishing drop-offs, is they walk up to the edge of the drop-off. They're standing in knee-deep water. They're casting out into
past
5 or 6 or 10 feet. And they're just throwing as far as they can out in front of them. That's not where the fish are. The fish run up and down those sides. They use that wall. Picture it as a drop off with a wall.
Right.
It usually isn't. It's usually more, you know, a little mm-hmm. more slanted than that.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of have it in your head that it's a wall there, and you want to work that wall.
And I think a lot of people tend to forget, and this is where my Sabine experience and my, you know, experience going from shallow to much deeper water on those cuts into the intercoastal, people tend to forget trout will be in 20 feet of water. I mean, they will be deep. Yeah. They will be deep off those drop-offs. And I can't tell you how many times there's a particular place, anybody who's fished Sabine knows exactly where I'm talking about, near Stutes Island, where there's a big cutoff, drop-off into the intercoastal, and it's pronounced. You know, it's a pretty strong. And I see boat after boat drift through there, boat after boat, you know, working there. And I'm talking about artificial. You know, live bait is a whole different story, depending on where you want to, what you're throwing and where you want to drop it. But, like, they're working their bait fast up above, you know, and still 4 or 5 feet of water.
Yeah.
Let it drop all the way down and work it from there. That's my experience on the deep drop-offs there, because we tend to think trout, skinny water, big trout, right? Not necessarily on those big drop-offs.
Not always. And deep is relative.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go down there to Mansfield, and you're looking at miles and miles and miles. It's nothing but knee-deep. Mm-hmm. Then there's some old oil field cuts that go up towards the island, and sometimes those fish are just in those oil field cuts, and those cuts are all silted in, and they may only be 2 feet, 3 foot deep, but it's a difference between everything else that's around it. So think of them as structure. You know, think of any kind of drop-off, anything like that, as structure, and the fish will orient to it.
One more thing I would add, and again, just from my experience catching trout in deeper water off of these drop-offs, and again, I'm not talking about the bay system drop-off, a bigger drop-off. People use these on the jetties all the time. Throw a crankbait. Just throw a regular old crankbait. People don't like us talking about that.
Yeah.
Because, but hey, sorry. We're here to help people catch fish. I would throw, there's an old channel mark. I'm giving away a whole spot and everything here. there's a navigation marker, you know, metal, you know, the big ones.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have another name, but that's what I'm calling it. And I would throw a crankbait around it, and it would go as deep as you want it, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Boom. I'm telling you, man, boom. Yeah.
Those 22-foot, 25-foot crankbaits,
yeah,
they are a pain to throw, but they work.
They work.
And they'll work at the jetties. They'll work anywhere. The big advantage to throwing one with a big lip like that, you can run it in the rocks. You can run it into anything, because the way it runs in the water, it comes in bill first.
Yeah.
And it's got that big old bill. And anything it hits, it just kind of moves off of it.
Yeah.
And it's actually better the more stuff you hit. The bass guys know that. Mm-hmm. But saltwater, we don't think about it as so much.
Yeah.
But I used to fish up in the rivers and throw those big, deep diving crankbaits, throw them right to the bank, and then rip them.
Yeah.
And put your rod tip down. You can get it lower. The lighter the line you use, the deeper it'll go as well.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that would make that big a difference, but it really does.
We're ticking off a bunch of people today.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, one more thing, since we already got some of the old crankbait guys mad at us. Don't worry about buying the expensive ones. You go through them pretty quick.
Yeah, you can.
You go through them pretty quick sometimes, because you'll hit a Spanish Mac or something on the jetties and in the places where I'm talking about. Yeah. You get hung up. You get, you know, all kinds of stuff happening down
I'm
there.
I'm big on the better crankbaits on those real deep diving ones because they run truer.
Okay.
I've tried using some, you know, cheap knockoffs, and they run left or they run right, and they kind of flip over on their side a little bit. Some you can tune them up. You can turn the eye a little bit and do some things with the bill and kind of tune them up. It's easier when
get what you pay for.
Well, when you pull out a man's DD 22 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think deep diver 22. I used to throw those a lot. And shoot, man, every one of them ran like a champ coming out.
Yeah.
And the bass guys, they actually want them to run a little left or right at times. And they know how to play with the bills and make it do exactly what they want. Because they'll run a crankbait and run it down a piling and have it, say, running to the right where it's bumping into that piling.
And it's not helping. You're talking about it's going the wrong way.
No. They'll tune it
that way. Okay.
To make it run into stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, if they're running parallel to the structure, they'll tune it where it'll run towards the structure and bang into stuff. It's really pretty interesting. You can get way off into crankbaits.
Yeah.
One of my good buddies, Jason Bryant, I've talked about him a couple of times on here. He and I fish a lot of tournaments together. And his nickname on the old message boards was Crankbait.
Really?
Yeah. He understood them, and he'd be a good one to talk to about it.
Well, he's probably mad at us now, but that's all right.
I don't know if he even listens, to tell you the truth. He's listened to me so much on a boat, I don't know if he wants to listen anymore.
This is true. This is true. Just another little helpful hint there, man. You know, I keep, it's far too many, but I keep usually six or seven rods on my boat, you know, rigged different ways because I don't want to mess with stuff. And I always have one with the little clip on, you know, whatever, quick release clip, because sometimes I'll just put something weird on there. And a lot of times it's a crankbait. Well, I'm like, ooh, this is a good spot for a crankbait. Let's clip it on there and go. They work, man. They work on those drop-offs. And that's the one thing I wanted to mention. But, you know, drop-offs in bays, the other thing we need to emphasize here is any change, you know, any change in depth is something you're looking for. So if it goes from, you know, like I'm in East Matagorda now, if it goes from 2.5 feet to 3.5 feet, that can be pretty significant right there.
Yeah, deep's relative, man. I mean, like I said, you're fishing down the lower Laguna Madre, six inch ledge can be what holds the fish.
Yeah.
I've talked to Wayne and Ernest and those guys about that quite a bit. No, Mike McBride, he's talked about it a lot. He has some spots that it's less than a foot difference, but they'll orient to that line. It's all about bait. For whatever reason, the bait is acting different along there, gathering or whatever it's doing. That's the only reason the fish would be there.
Of course.
But, anything. Now, you're in Galveston, you got a 6-inch difference.
Who knows? Yeah.
I'm not going to pay attention to that.
Not going to be much.
Yeah. But, you're fishing 3 or 4 feet of water and it drops off to 8 feet of water. Yeah. Okay.
You always got to ask yourself why. You know, even if you just stumble into some fish, for whatever reason, even if you're just blind casting because you're frustrating and you hadn't caught anything, and we've all been there, and you're like, screw it, I'm just going to throw here, and all of a sudden you get into some fish, ask yourself why.
I think the biggest mistake beginners make, and even some, you know, a little more advanced than beginners, they stumble into fish like that. Okay, man, we had a day.
Yeah.
Well, we stopped at this spot, and man, well, I mean, and they put that spot in their GPS, and that's their spot. They're spot fishing. They didn't pay any attention to what the conditions were.
Right.
Why did they stumble into those fish? Why was it so good right there?
What was the depth? What was the tide? What was the wind?
Exactly. That's when you get to be a better fisherman.
Yeah.
Is when you stop and you're hammering fish, but you take a time out and look around and go, man, okay, I see what's going on here. The tide was moving this way. The wind was blowing across here. The water color, all those little things. Now, when those things line up again, now go back to that spot. You go back to that same spot tomorrow or the next day or, you know, next weekend when you have your next time off.
Could be nothing.
It's a dead spot.
Yeah.
Well, then you get discouraged about it. There was something about that area that caused it to hold the fish, and it was caused, you know, it was because of the conditions and the bait fish were
there. And it's so easy to do. I mean, again, being honest, I didn't always do that, but now if I catch one or two in a row, you know, a couple in a row or more, hit your app. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, what is the tide right now? Oh, wow, it's rising. I didn't know it wasn't supposed to rise right now. Well, the depth is this, the contour is that. It takes 30 seconds to, you know, I go on Fish Angler and it has it in real time right there. Boom, all right, I'm going to cast again. At least now I know what the conditions are.
And the other thing it does for you is now you've put together that little piece of that puzzle.
Yeah.
So now I know that, man, we were in about 3 or 4 feet of water. It was a sandy bottom and the tide was moving down the shoreline on an outgoing tide. Hey, I know another spot like this.
Yeah.
When that spot plays out, you know, even on a really good fishing spot, it'll play out on you. You know, at some point, somebody's going to bump the boat. Somebody's going to make some noise.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens, you know, you've caught enough of the fish that they all get the message. I don't know what happens.
I mean, I always say you got to get with the getting good.
Yeah. But have it in your mind. Now you've paid attention to what was going on there, what the conditions were. let's see if I can replicate that in another part of the bay.
Or crank up the motor, and I've done this a few times, and it has worked, you know, catch up to that tide. You know, go up up the shoreline where maybe the tide's still working a little bit, and go from there. And you're a big advocate of that as well.
Different bay systems work. Yeah, it works. Some bay systems, that's just not going to work as well.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, there's West Bay and Galveston was like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because that it's so long and narrow, and it's got openings at both ends.
And it just barrels through there.
It gets a lot of tide movement through there. And when it goes slack here, you can kind of think, okay, 4 or 5 miles down the way, it's still moving.
Yeah, yeah. All right, right here on the Bite Me podcast, Cap Scott and old John Lopez, and your questions. Boy, this is an interesting one, too. You know, another question from a listener, topic suggestion. When fishing a drain on an outgoing tide, if it's a boat traffic lane, does that automatically rule it out? Captain Scott, I think this was directed directly to you.
No, it doesn't rule it out. I've sat in boat drains before when I knew there was some fish and actually caught more fish as people came by. I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it... And it was always doing what I talked about a while ago, casting up against the sides, not out into the boat lane, casting along the bank.
Yeah.
And parallel casting. I had a spot in Port O'Connor years and years ago when I first started going there. I didn't know my way around. If I got too far away, I got stuck. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was a lot of shallow water, and I didn't have that shallow of a boat.
Yeah.
And so Buddy and I, we'd stop on the little, everybody knows when they leave out of Port O'Connor, out of the fishing center, you got the little cuts that go through there.
Yeah.
We would park ourselves on the side of one of those cuts and just stand there and cast. Mm-hmm. You know, we caught trout all day long like that.
Boats whizzing by.
Yeah. I think they're used to it. You know, if you live next to a freeway, you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. If you live out in the country and you stay in a hotel next to a freeway, it'll drive you nuts.
Right, right.
Same thing with quiet.
Right.
You know, somebody from the city goes out there to my place and it almost drives them insane because there's no noise.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of applies to fish and other animals and stuff too. I know it applies to deer.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Deer that live along the highway, yeah. You see them all the time, you know, as you're driving down the highway. You go to a ranch like where I do the photos and you're a half a mile from a deer driving on the dirt road and he freaks out and takes off.
Right.
They're not as used to it. So I think that's what happens with those fish.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a major boat traffic place, but it's got bait and it's got a reason for them to be there and a reason for them to feed, why not?
There is a etiquette aspect to this as well.
Huge.
And I've done that in several different bay systems. Trinity Bay, I used to fish there a lot. You know, you're going into Anahuac, there are some really good fishing spots that get real shallow right on that entryway, man. And sometimes with the way the wind's blowing, you know, you're kind of in the entryway, so to speak. And they won't even see you, some of these guys. So you got to kind of pay attention and understand that you are the road bump. You know, you're the one that needs to take care of the issue. Move around slowly. Use your trolling motor. What else should we be cognizant of here?
Don't get mad about it.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're in the way.
Yeah. I mean, I hear it from boaters, kayakers, everybody that, man, he wouldn't even slow down. And, you know, he went on by me, blah, blah, blah. I was sitting in, well, where were you?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was sitting at the mouth of this cut. And I said, you know, there's about 3,000 acres of marsh behind you. You can't just block off 3,000 acres of marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are still going to want to go in and out of there. I mean, I know Caleb has some spots down there that he goes into.
I know a couple of them.
And people will park right in the mouth of them.
Yep.
And be sitting there fishing. And they're blocking miles and miles, square miles of good fishing back there. And Caleb's going to go back there. So is everybody else. And there's places where you're parked like that. That's better. The one in particular I'm thinking of with Caleb. You can't slow down.
I was just going to say that, Scott.
You got to stay up on plane just to get across to get back there.
Mm-hmm.
If you slow down,
I've done it.
You're going to hit shell and you're stuck.
Yeah.
The kayaks, I had them waving their arms at me down at the Lighthouse Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a particular little spot right where they launch, and they launch and they paddle directly across the shrimp boat channel, and then they all park around this little opening.
Yeah.
And you got Lighthouse Lakes is a huge area. Lots of really good, mm-hmm. good fishing back there. And I'm running my poling skiff and I want to go back there and go poling. The only way I can get in and out is through that cut right there.
Yeah.
And
you got to barrel through.
They're parked.
Yeah.
And usually with that, you know, place like that, I can pole in, pole out. So I'll stop the boat and pole past them, but they still get irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when you were a kid? We all did it. We all played football or baseball out in the street.
Car.
Yeah. And
that's a great analogy. That's exactly what you, exactly the attitude you need.
Did we get mad at the cars?
No, it's their right of way.
Yes, they were, it was the street.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great analogy. And I'm going to use that again because a couple of those back lakes that I go to when it's time to go, I mean, I go. I'm not Caleb crazy, but I mean, you know, I'll go 25. I'll go, you know, 23 or whatever. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, if I'm with someone, I'll have my son or whomever just kind of stand up. I said, let me know if you see someone because, you know, I don't want to kill anybody out there, but I can't slow down. And all of a sudden the shell just rips up my boat.
That and what kayakers need to understand, a lot of kayakers haven't boat fished. You know, that they're getting into fishing. Yeah. Whatever. There's a lot of new fishermen start off with kayaks,
mm-hmm.
and they hate it when a boat comes by them. You know, it just ruins their day. I've seen it on Texas Kayak Fishing message board.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't even slow down. You don't want me to slow down.
See, I go back and forth on that. You've said that in the past.
I mean, it depends on the location.
Yeah, maybe that
really
it.
Does depend on the location, but. Like Highland Bayou, you know, it's a high traffic area and there's mm-hmm. a lot of kayaks that go through there going to the marsh.
Yeah.
A big boat slows down. It displaces a lot more water.
Because it slows down and there's a big initial push.
It makes a much bigger wave
going
slow than it had. Like, a little boat like mine, my little poling skiff,
mm-hmm.
if I'm up on plane,
that's nothing.
I put out a little ripple.
Yeah.
Your kayak's making more of a wake than I am.
Yeah.
So, there are discourteous boaters, there's no doubt about it,
mm-hmm.
that will run too close to the kayaks and, you know, really wash them out. The worst in the world is that medium speed boat
mm-hmm.
coming through
mm-hmm.
where he's plowing. You know, the bow's up a little bit.
Looks like
the
a barge.
Rear end's down.
Yeah, it looks like a barge.
Yeah, man, that will rock your world in a kayak.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all know, I mean, I kayak fished a long time. I wrote a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm talking about with it. So I always would much prefer, especially if I was fishing a cut, you know, and trying to work the edge of a marsh,
mm-hmm.
I would much rather that boat go and get past me. Make the run in, run out, whatever you're going to do, and just get past me. Get on with it. When they slow down and they just putter through, then now it takes forever for them to get through there and I feel like it messes the fishing up worse.
And it also depends on how wide that cut is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little wider cut, you can kind of slow down and get on the other edge, and it doesn't really affect anything. Yeah. Or maybe even it's even more reason to barrel through on that opposite side.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all locations.
Yeah. You know,
it can. There's no set rule
mm-hmm.
you know, as to how to handle it. But my rule is always I try to put myself in the other person's shoes. How would I want somebody to go past me if I was in there?
I do like that analogy. I think that's what our listeners need to take away. You're playing on the street, man.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing kickball, touch football. Although some of my friends, we just like to play tackle on the street.
Well, sometimes it turned into tackle.
Yeah, and here comes a car. You know, car, just get to the side for a second. Let him go by.
Yeah.
Pick up your game again.
We all did it. Mm-hmm. Car.
Yep.
Everybody yelled it.
That's the first thing I said when you said that.
Yeah.
You know what? Since we're on kayaks, you got this question. So I think it's perfect time to add this one to the podcast because I think you know more about the details of this because you sent it to me than I do. But it's really talking about transporting your kayak in a truck, which is a lot of times you don't have the, a lot of people don't want to spend the money or don't have one of the little trailers or the roof racks or whatever. You spent a lot of years just putting your kayak and kayaks in the back of your truck. What would you recommend transporting these kayaks? Because there's so many people getting into it, even boaters who want to get to some of these spots that only a kayak get to.
Yeah, people get way too elaborate. Carried away and elaborate on it. Man, Dean and I did it for years. We threw our kayaks in the back of the truck and drove to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, put a flag on it and drop the tailgate, put a flag on it, and let's go.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's become very popular, I've got one. It's the bed extenders that fit into your square hitch,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a little goalpost, and so it extends further out. And we ran 16-foot kayaks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Those Tarpon 160s, that was our tournament boat. And I had a Dodge with an 8-foot bed, so I dropped the tailgate. Now I'm at 10 feet. I still got 6 feet of boat sticking out.
Yeah.
But you tie them in good, everything's fine. People start trying to reinvent the wheel. And the question in particular, this guy, he didn't want to stack two kayaks on top of each
other. Yeah, that's what it was. I remember now.
So he wanted to make a deal where he could put the bow of the kayak up on his toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was going to build a deal over the tailgate.
So it's out elevated. Of
wood, so it would level it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My dad had a similar setup
mm-hmm.
way back when I got him and my mom into kayaking. And he ties things down like it ain't going anywhere. Yeah, I mean,
we all know that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he can tie it down, and he uses more straps and more mm-hmm. rope than it actually, you know, he could be tying down the Titanic with some of this. So, as good as he is, he blew a back window of his truck out.
Ouch.
Just because he had an emergency stop, had to stop real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the boat only moved 2 inches.
That's enough.
But if it was an inch away from the window,
mm-hmm.
and then it slammed into it. I have carried kayaks like that where we were stacking so many of them in the bed of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be one that was high enough that it would hit the window if it went forward. And I'd take one of the big foam blocks and strap it to the bow.
Right.
And that would, you know, it cushioned it enough to make a difference.
Well, just peace of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as where he was going with that, stacking kayaks on top of each other is not going to hurt them.
Yeah.
If you think that hurts a kayak, then don't go to a kayak shop and go in their back room and don't go to one of the manufacturers and go in their warehouse.
Yeah.
Because kayaks are stacked.
Yeah.
And that's how they transport them. When they're brought to you in an 18-wheeler, they're not on racks.
Like 8 of them on top of each other.
Oh, God. They're stacked like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
They're tough, man. They're mm-hmm. they're a lot tougher than a lot of people give them credit for. It's hard to screw up a kayak. It really is. Cause
they're durable, man.
Yeah, they're durable. It's big.
Plus, you're going to be dragging it over rocks and, you know, sand and shell and everything else. I mean, anyone who's ever had that spot that you wanted to launch your kayak, and trust me, I've got experience on this, where you end up, you know, just getting wet and scratching it and everything. There's always going to be a spot where, like, I want to launch right here. Well, there's not a kayak launch there or a boat launch there. You gotta get creative.
We had I think I've told you this.
I can't tell you how many times I just, like, jumped in.
We had a place that we fished in out of Tampa
mm-hmm.
that the name of it was Over the Rail. That was
that's what you had to do.
That was the nickname for this spot. And it was at the Skyway Bridge, that mm-hmm. big, huge bridge mm-hmm. in Tampa. And there's a service road that goes down there, and it makes a U-turn up underneath it.
Yeah.
Like, we have a bunch of them here.
Yeah, yeah.
And you drive off of the bridge, and you hit that U-turn, and then going along, it was the road and guardrail, and then it was rocks, all, like jetty rocks on the side. And you pulled over right there, you stopped, and you literally threw your kayaks over the rail, tied them off, and then went and parked.
Yeah.
And then you carried your stuff
on
across the
rocks and everything else.
Yeah. You know, yeah. But you carried your rods and all your stuff across the road and over the railing and mm-hmm. put it in your kayak.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't want to go park and then have to carry kayaks back across that road.
Right.
So the best thing to do was just stop real quick and throw them over and then pull up and then you get your stuff together.
You know, my wife always says, man, if Gibson could only talk, my guy Gibson, you know Gibson. Yeah. because, like, I can't tell you how many silly things like that I've done that only Gibson has seen because I was by myself down there. One of them was at my place down in Sargent. I have a dock. I don't have kayak launch, and the water was low, but it was an outgoing tide. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get on that little kayak. And I don't have a good kayak. I need to get one of those Jacksons. But anyway, I just like tied it off and I just like jumped and I landed on my butt right perfect. Except then you start rocking everywhere. And then I had to, you know, pull myself back on the rope because the kayak, you know, drifted away. I didn't tie it good enough. Grab my rods and everything. And Gibson is just looking out the back window of the trailer like, you are an idiot. I mean, there's got to be an easier way to do that.
Well, yeah, maybe sometimes there is. Sometimes there isn't.
Sometimes there is. And sometimes there isn't. Hey, speaking of Camille, and the Jackson's going to be there today.
Oh, yeah.
And all weekend.
Yeah. She'll be at Fish Tackle Unlimited's booth.
Yeah.
She's got her Jackson kayaks there. She got the Blue Skies.
Mm-hmm.
If you hadn't looked at a Blue Sky and you want to fish something
explain
that's stable.
It, 'cause that's not your, yeah, that's God. Not your normal.
It's a catamaran style hull.
Does it have one?
It's actually two hulls.
Okay.
And then it's got, you know, like a catamaran sailboat.
Yeah.
But then it's got like a bass seat sitting up there and it's got the pedal drive with a little propeller on there. Mm-hmm. It's got a back deck and a front deck. I've got on them and actually just stood on the front deck, and it's perfectly stable.
Yeah.
They've got – the stability is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got one now with a trolling motor on it. They've got it – you just got to see them to
but you
fully
can get
understand
skinny,
it.
Skinny, man. It still it works.
It's really skinny, yeah. Skinny water, and the stability is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
If you – you know, if you're uncomfortable being mm-hmm. – And you're sitting up. You're sitting in a regular chair.
And that means your vision is better, your sight lines.
It's more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Generally, I get that from people when they're talking to me about kayaks. Man, I'd love to do a kayak, but sitting down low to the water like mm-hmm. that all day long just kills my back, or you know, it bothers me. I can't stay like that for long. This is like being in a bass seat on a bass boat.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting up normal, and I mean, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It really is. They're a little big and bulky,
mm-hmm.
so you're going to need a trailer. That's not one that you just throw in the bed of your truck. They're
right,
heavy,
right?
But they've got a wheel system.
Did you drag
it? It's really cool. It pops in and out,
mm-hmm.
and you lift them up. Basically, it's landing gear.
You
lift them up when you're out fishing, and when you get back, you just...
Oh, so they stay with you. You don't just insert them like some of these others.
You don't take them off and take them back to the truck. They're there all day.
Yeah.
And they're out of the way. And then when you get back to the water, you want to haul your kayak back up the shoreline. Hell, I've got three of those in my yard, you know, with my wife. And when I mow,
I'm
dragging them around. I pick them up with one hand and just walk them.
That's
walk
pretty
them
sweet.
Out of the way, mow behind them, and then walk them back.
That's pretty dang sweet right there. So I wanted to mention that. And of course, the gear, you know, you brought your little buff right now, your Bite Me buff. I gave Chet and Jake from the Boatyard new Bite Me shirts, new color, gray. So you can get that at scottnohlphotography.com. Here's another topic, really, really good one. We could probably go for a long time on this, but let's just give the nuts and bolts while we can. And dig into it again maybe next week in more detail. But I want to get to it because this question's been out there for about a week or so. Protected shorelines versus wind-blown shorelines. Patrick touched on it a few weeks ago, you know, on if the wind is right enough to be able to fish the wind-blown shoreline. You know, I think most of us would prefer that. I was doing it just the other day. But it's like there's a sweet spot. It's hard to tell because, well, some people still go if it's rough. Yeah. I just don't want to get beat up that much sometimes, you know, unless I'm in a, you know, tournament or something. But, you know, what are you looking at besides the wind when you're looking at a protected shoreline fishing and a windblown shoreline fishing?
Depends on the kind of fishing I'm doing, number one. If mm-hmm. I'm doing my sight casting and I'm poling and we're fly fishing, I'm going to get on the protected shoreline.
Yeah.
I might not see as many fish on that protected shoreline, mm-hmm. but
you see them better.
We can see them better.
Yeah.
We have a much better chance of connecting. Fishing a tournament, I'm going to go to that windy side.
Mm-hmm.
basically what it is, the bait fish end up on that windy side.
Yep.
Some people say that the wind actually pushes the bait fish over there. I think it pushes the bait fish food over there. I think it pushes the plankton and algae that the bait fish are feeding on.
Yeah.
I think it gets pushed to the windy side.
Because bait fish are going to be there. They're not going to go all the way across a bay.
Yeah, they can swim. I mean, yeah. Strong enough winds, yeah, it does push them around. I've seen them get pushed around points and corners and things like that where they're trying to swim against it, and you see them going backwards.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can happen. And I think they get trapped in, say, a little cove.
Right.
You know, a little indention cove that's got a strong wind blowing right into it. And it all depends on wind velocity. Like right now, I was about to go out the other day. I had the boat ready and everything. They had said it was going to be calm.
Like, eh.
I woke up and it was 28 gusting to 35.
No, thank you.
And I said, no.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I'm not that mad at them.
Yeah.
You know, I could go and I could work my way around and stay on some protected shorelines, but I'd rather not. You know, if I don't need to.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a tournament day. I'm not guiding that day. I don't have to go out and fish. I'll wait till it gets a little nicer.
I'm thinking now in terms of trout. I'm going to be on that windy shore side, the windblown side, the majority of the time, unless we're getting some big time. I mean, where it's just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Especially if you can wade. If you're thinking trout, and especially wading, but even if you're not. On that windblown side, if it's good enough, and only you can be the judge. Only you know what's comfortable enough, you know, and what's strategic enough that you can actually fish, you know, adequately and accurately, you know. Only you can decide. But when you're on the windblown side and it's not too crazy, you can see patterns of where the bait most likely would be. You may not even see the bait because there's chop or whatever it is, but you can see some eddies. You can see some points that. Clearly, the water is moving more around that. If the tide's moving, I think you can just you really increase your odds because of the bait being blown. Oh, I say it all the time. It may not be accurate, but I will say it's blowing the bait that way as a term, or maybe literally. It's just finding. I like islands, man. I love islands on windblown shorelines. Not just the shoreline, maybe one of your spots, air quotes, but like where there's maybe a reef. That's, you know, exposed or an island that's exposed. I love that on the windblown side because you can go all around it and you're going to find where the bait, especially for trout, is really working.
Yeah. Bait's going to look for the eddy. They're going to look, they're going to try to get out of that, that mess.
Right.
And those are the spots where you want to fish.
Yeah.
I once took some kayak when I was guiding kayak fishing. I had some kayak guys out and we were drift fishing. Through this marsh, and it was blowing pretty damn hard, and it was a marsh that had just tons of little islands all in it. It's like big open areas, but lots and lots and lots of islands. And we're all three fishing, you know, we're drifting across there, and I'm the only one catching anything.
Yeah.
And I start watching these guys, and they're casting like crazy as they're drifting across these open areas, and then they'd pause when they went by one of the islands and then cast to the open areas again.
Oh.
And they were doing exactly opposite of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got with them. I'm their guide. So, you know, I'm getting with them. I was like, hey, man, pay attention to these islands. You know, as you're drifting past that island, cast in front of it, cast to the end of it, now cast behind it.
Yeah.
You know, as you go by it.
Get up on it.
Yeah.
I've done that enough times. You know, I'll just wade to the island, get on it, get on the other side.
Yeah. These were tiny islands. I mean,
oh, I got you.
Yeah. You know, just like, it was just a, it was just a dotted area. And so you were passing an island pretty quick. You know, I mean, there were enough of them. It wasn't like you were having to wait a long time in between.
Yeah.
And they started doing that, started catching fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was all reds and they were all on the tips of the islands.
Yeah.
Yeah. They weren't in front of it. They weren't behind it. They were right on the tips.
You'll get a feel for it. And, you can, catch up with Captain Scott. And myself, starting today, if you're out there at 4 o'clock, if not, Captain Scott will be there. Sunday is your other one, right?
Yep.
What time on Sunday?
I think it's 1:15.
1:15-ish. We'll call it that.
I think so. You can look it up. I put the schedule on the Bite Me.
Oh, good.
On one of the threads that was
okay.
Asking about the boat show.
Yeah. Fishing show.
It's a fishing show.
Come on, get
show.
It right, Scott. Okay, it was me that said that last week. But anyway, guys, man, we really appreciate it. Come out and see us. We just talked about all our friends that are going to be out there, and certainly we love to say hello, and we'll get your questions. And even if you have one that you can't necessarily get to the show in time, ask us anyway when you see us. I'll hang out at Scott's booth a little bit if you'll have me. And other places. I know I'm going to go see Mike Acrylic from the Knock and Tail guys. I'll be hanging out with those guys. Wade Wright, of course, will be hanging out with those guys. So walk around. Don't be bashful. And we will catch you out at the boat show. If not, hope you guys catch a bunch of fish. Hope you get exactly what you want at the fishing show. Say it right, Scott. And we will talk to you next time, man.
There was one other one that I meant to mention a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
Is Brian Little with Sabine. He's got all the Sabine skiffs
in
there.
That's your guy, man.
And I walked by today. He's got some cool-looking little boats over here. He's starting to branch out and experiment a little bit.
Like what?
Just in the design of the boat. So mm-hmm.
I thought you were talking like sizes.
Yeah, it's kind of about the height of the sides and things like that. He made a river boat.
Oh, nice.
He's got some different stuff that he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's starting to play around.
You'll be wandering around with him too.
Yeah, I'll get over there some.
Good.
Yeah, I got to man my booth most of the time.
Yeah. Okay.
If I'm not manning my booth, I got to count on Caleb to look at it.
Well, you know what he does to props.
Well, I know what he does at his booth. He wanders off. he sees something shiny, and he's like, off he goes.
All right, guys, man. Catch a bunch of fish if we don't see you out there. And if neither of those happen, we will talk to you next week, man. Thanks a lot.